Kyle Malin, who's the editor of the MERS newsletter. How are you, Kyle?
Great. How are you doing, Tony?
Man, I need a vacation after being on vacation.
Yeah, you and me both. Man. Where did you go on vacation, Tony?
I actually went up north. The in-laws have a place up in the Oscoda area, so I spent a lot of time out on the Asable River and running around with kids, seeing movies and golfing and going deep water fishing and that kind of stuff.
Oh, that sounds good. I was over at Silver Lake over by Traverse City, so we were both up north, even though it's still hot up there.
Yeah, hot. Now, did you experience any storms in that area?
No, not when we were awake anyway.
Yeah,
I think it rained a little bit on our last day.
All right, same
with me. And our four-year-old was terribly upset about it, but we were leaving in like 10 minutes, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah, same with us. We heard a lot about the storms and the power outages and the heat down here, but where we were about 3 hours and 15 minutes north, we didn't see any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, big day in politics. When we talk about ballot proposals, folks got to get their paperwork handed in.
Yeah. Today's the day that if you want to put something on the ballot for November as far as a constitutional amendment goes, you have to turn in your signatures today. And for the most part, we know who is going to be turning them in or who is supposed to be turning them in. We've seen the paid circulators out there passing the petitions around. So we've got a good idea. You know, there's been this under-the-radar drive to put new regulations on something called fracking that we're going to be keeping an eye on. You know, we kind of pass that off as not being all that serious, but the folks who are organizing it think they may have enough signatures. Now, you know, that's easier said than done, though. Usually these things take paid circulators going out and, you know, bothering people for a few bucks a signature. You know, if there's a grassroots organization that can pull it off, all the more power to them.
All right, Kyle. So what do you think is going to make the ballot, and what is it?
Well, I think that we've heard about the proposal to expand casinos. That's going to get on there. The renewable energy standards that would bump up how much renewables we get by 25% by the year 2025, that's going to get on. We're going to see the collective bargaining proposal that's being put around by the UAW. That's going to make the ballot, unless there's a legal challenge to that knocks that off. But that will have enough signatures anyway. We've also got this other ballot proposal, this home health care proposal that would put in the Constitution. Essentially, a collective bargaining rights for people who treat folks who are homebound and receive money from Medicaid. Or Medicare, or rather, that one is going to get on the ballot. That's pretty much a lock. There's something by an outside group called, I don't know exactly what they're called, but I mean, they would put into the Constitution that if the legislature wanted to bump up taxes or do any type of tax increase, they would need a two-thirds supermajority. By all accounts, that's going to get on as well. So that gets us up to five. There's probably one I'm missing, too. But, you know, it's been a very active ballot proposal season. We're really kind of surprised to see this type of action from folks. But, you know, it kind of comes on the heels of all Republican rule. You know, when you've got a Republican majority that can do what it wants, you have a minority that feels disenfranchised and has a lot of pent-up aggression and wants to go out and do some proposals of their own. They want to do some initiatives. They don't want to get rolled by the Republicans at all costs. And I think that's what we're seeing here.
All right, Obamacare here in the state of Michigan. We hear the Dems saying that the Republicans have to get moving forward with a program for the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. What are the Republicans doing in response to that?
Well, they want to make it a campaign issue for November. Is what they want. They want to use this as a tool to help get Mitt Romney elected and other folks elected as well on the statewide ballot. You know, the Michigan House is up this year, and they're the ones who are holding up this proposal. And I think that they believe that they may have the public on their side by gumming up the works on this. And so that's why they've been very squishy as to when they're actually going to move on a health care exchange, for example, or an expanded Medicaid plan. Both of these, you would think, well, the Medicaid plan, we're not sure if it needs legislative approval, but let's assume that it does. The House isn't in a big hurry to advance on what they see as Obamacare and a chance to get more votes in November. I think until we see a lot of public momentum going in favor of this proposal, I think that's what we're going to continue to see up until November.
All right. We'll be back in session next week. What can we expect from the legislators?
Well, they have to wrap up, Tony, this proposal to reform the teacher health care pension system and the health care system by requiring teachers and retirees to pay a little more to shore up that system. As far as the health care, you know, the teacher health care system goes, that is not being funded in any real substantial way. And the proposals to keep this, obviously teachers are going to have to pay more than what they're doing right now. But the idea is to keep this viable into the future and to create a system that isn't going to implode and that won't get taken away for current and future retirees and put us in a real bad situation. So that's going to get settled in the Senate, hopefully. You know, the Senate really wants to end the hybrid retirement system that's offered to current school employees right now. They just want to make it a straight 401k. But the administration doesn't want to do that for a couple reasons. First of all, I don't know if it's going to actually save a lot of money because there hasn't been a lot of study into whether the hybrid system is really cost inefficient. And then there's a lot of upfront cost to closing a pension system because all the new people coming in, there is no new people coming in. It's just the folks in the system. It comes in a closed system. And so you have upfront costs with that, and the administration says we don't have money for that right now.
Thad McConner has resigned. Tell us about this story that we've been following, especially since, Kyle, you told us about all the challenges he was having trying to get his campaign going.
Yeah, it's just been one sad story after another for Thad McConner, hasn't it? I mean, first he wasn't able to turn enough ballot signatures to make the ballot. And as a sitting congressman, he only needed 1,000, which should be a piece of cake for him. But instead, he said he turned it over to his regular campaign staff, who just completely wet the bed on it. And instead, what they had is a lot of duplicates that were photocopied off a photo machine and then with forged dates on them. It was just a complete mess. I got myself a copy. Got myself, how'd you like that? Bought myself a copy of the petitions and looked at them myself, and it was obviously forged. And, you know, so now he's just decided he's going to resign from Congress altogether, you know, a half a year before his term ends. And that really puts the district and the governor in a bad situation. The district, because it's not going to have any representation. But, you know, for the governor, too, the law says that he shall declare a special election to replace Thad McConner. Well, it's too late to put a special election on top of the regularly scheduled primary and general election. It's just too late to do that. And so now the governor's put in a position of, do I hold a special primary election after the regular primary, or do I leave the seat vacant? Can I even leave the seat vacant? That's what he's been doing this weekend with his legal team, trying to figure out what he's going to actually do to fill that seat. It's a bad situation for him.
The Farmers Market Association, I did not know that there such association existed until I read this story on the MERS newsletter at MERSnews.com. But they're welcoming the possibility of having alcohol available. Tell us about this story.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. What we're looking at here is some changes that would allow folks who are selling, you know, sell on the roadside there, sell their wares, apples and pumpkins and that type of stuff, to be able to sell craft beer or craft wine along with the craft jelly and jams and everything else that you can buy at these roadside stands. And the idea is to promote Michigan agriculture. Again, there's so many microbrews and breweries and wineries in this state that it seems like a natural extension. You know, the issue then, of course, from a liquor control standpoint, though, is, you know, how do you control the output of this kind of stuff and, you know, accessibility? It's, you know, that creates a bit of a question, but it the rules and regulations get also in the way of commerce, and usually commerce and trying to help the local economy went out. We have a lot of people coming from out of state. You know, I don't know what it was like in Oscoda there for you, Tony, but up in Traverse City, I was up at Moomer's, which Good Morning America had as one of the best ice cream places in the entire country. That place was a mob scene, Tony. I waited 30 minutes for an ice cream cone. It was ridiculous. And these folks were from out of the state. They were out of the country in some cases. I was up in Glen Arbor. That was mobbed with, I was looking at the gift registry there. There are people from California. There are people from Texas. Folks are coming up to northern Michigan, and they want to experience the state, and folks want to make things like our craft beer and wine more accessible to them as they come up. This is just a good way to do it.
All right, final question for you. The Michigan Nurses Association is very politically active. We seems like we have their president on this program every few weeks, and now they've got a mailer out that's calling a state legislator an embarrassment.
Yeah, this is really a strange situation out in Warren in the what is the new 28th district. You know, the Republicans during redistricting have roped in a couple of Democrats here and there out in southeast Michigan. And one of them is John Swetolski and Lucille Liss, current serving members who are running against each other in the Democratic primary. And Lucille Liss has a reputation to work with the other side, with Republicans, try and get some legislation through. She's been part of the bipartisan caucus. And she's taken some votes that organized labor and the Michigan Nurses Association haven't liked. Well, Lucille Liss is a registered nurse, and her nursing association doesn't like her votes. So they're actually mailing literature and making calls against her in her own district, calling her a disgrace to her profession, where she says that that organization has been taken over by union members and that it represents only a sliver of nurses statewide, and that she's standing up actually for a majority of nurses by voting the way that she does. And so it's really kind of a strange battle where you've got a person who actually practices the trade going up against the trade organization itself in a very competitive primary.
Kyle Malin, the editor of the MIRS newsletter. You can find much of his fine work at mirsnews.com. Kyle, thanks so much. Welcome back from vacation.
Hey, you too, Tony. My pleasure.